Tuesday, January 26, 2016. We're at the Palm Coast City Hall for the regular scheduled Palm Coast City Workshop. Would you please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Ness.
Here.
Vice Mayor Shipley.
Here.
Councilmember
DiLorenzo. Here.
Councilmember McGuire.
Present.
Councilmember O'Neill.
Here.
Mayor Washington.
Thank you very much. First item on our agenda is a resolution approving the purchase order to Twin Oxide USA for Twin Oxide Chlorine Dioxide.
I'm glad you said that. Good morning, everybody.
More than a straight face, too.
One of the, that's right.
Yes, sir.
We're trying at our new ZLD plant. We're still in the pilot program. The engineers and the plant operators are trying to maximize the efficiency out here in Sacramento. So it's the authorization of the purchase this. That's it. We're making good progress out there. Everybody's working hard to make it as efficient as possible.
Mr. Hogan.
Good morning, Mayor.
Tell me that we're not going to have a Flint, Michigan on our hands.
Please.
I can assure you that we're not.
That's one of the reasons why they're here, is that we knew that comment was coming.
that whole episode was mainly due to them changing source water. They started taking water out of the Flint River, and it was basically the lack of a corrosion control program. They didn't stabilize the water, which enabled it to leach lead from the customer's plumbing. They had, some very old plumbing at the customer's residence taps.
So this is not relevant at all to this issue, but I'm curious. So the lead is not in the source water per se. It's not in the water that's being pumped out of the plant. It's picking up the lead as it travels through the pipes.
That's correct.
Yeah. So if I had all plastic piping in my house, I probably wouldn't have the same lead problem as somebody who's got the older pipes.
Not unless it was in the source.
Okay.
I've got some concerns. This material is experimental. We are going to do something that other water companies in the United States, if there are any others, or there's very few. This chemical comes from overseas. What kind of receiving inspection quality control is going to assure us that what comes from Europe to put in our water is not going to have anything that a terrorist might put in it?
Well, that's a good question, Mr. McGuire. The product, as you probably know, it comes from the Netherlands. They have rigid quality control there. The business director, VP of business with Twin Oxide USA, is a former military pilot and got a lot of experience with Transcom. And they have a contract directly with DHL. They pick up the product right at the factory in the Netherlands. It gets on an airplane, past clear customs when it lands in Miami. If there's any appearance of any tampering, it's quarantined, then they directly deliver it to their warehouse in Cocoa Beach. The product is American National Standard Institute, National Sanitation Foundation Standard 60 approved. It has to go through rigorous testing, quality control just to meet those standards. Those are standards that all chemicals that are used in potable water treatment have to meet.
And that's fine, but it leaves the Netherlands, goes to Cocoa Beach, and eventually comes to Palm Coast. Is the city of Palm Coast going to do any kind of receiving qualitative analysis to determine that what you're buying from the Netherlands is exactly that and nothing else?
I guess one thing I didn't mention is that we buy the product. It's a two-part product. Part A, Part B comes in a five-gallon bucket, each part, A and B. And the buckets themselves are sealed with a tamper-proof pull tab. So, we inspect them, but no, we wouldn't have the ability to, you know, test the tamper. But if there was any evidence of tampering whatsoever, we would never even receive it.
Are you qualified to determine whether or not tampering has taken place?
I mean,
if I'm a terrorist and I want to perform an act of terror in the United States, for years and years it's been stated that, well, your water source is a prime target for terrorist activities. Mm-hmm. And now if you were telling me that this stuff is made in Douglas, Georgia, and coming in here, I'd feel a lot better. But it's coming out of Europe. Europe is having a lot of trouble with terrorist activities, and it's got a long way to go before it comes here. And forgive me for being obtuse, but I don't think there is any such thing as tamper-proof. I think that there needs to be some sort of receiving inspection, qualitative analysis done in Palm Coast before you dump this stuff in our water system. I got to drink it too. I don't think I can put enough bourbon in it to make it better, although I'm willing to try.
This is Phil Locke. He's the design engineer for the project.
I'm excited about the project. I think it's got promise. I just would feel better about it if this was an American company and it was coming in here. Not that I got anything against the Dutch, but you know, again, this is a long, circuitous route to get from the manufacturer to the end user.
It is. Twin Oxide USA, well, you know, we're kind of on the cutting edge with the ZLD and even the use of this product. It is used extensively and has been for the last 15 years in Australia, New Zealand, the Far East, and Europe.
I would also say that the seals on these things, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, it's clearly evident the seals were broken.
Yes.
It's not something that's easy to remove whatsoever. The other thing I would add is a couple other things. Is the city is monitoring this chemical makes chlorine dioxide, the disinfectant that's being used by the facility. And the plant monitors not only with a online residual analyzer to note the amount of the chlorine dioxide in water, but also they take samples. The city also does their own sampling regimen of all the primary and secondary water constituents. So if there's something in the water that the terrorists put in there, it would turn up under the suite of testing that they do.
Well, we hope so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be a fairly potent chemical to cause problems. That's a large amount of water. If you take the proportionality between water to chemical, anything dangerous would be diluted. So it would have to be, it seems to me, if something were in there that was, you know, intended to harm, it would have to be a big part of the chemical, which would cause, so in other words, a 5-gallon bucket would probably have to be 20% of whatever this other, and it wouldn't do its job then. Is that, you see what I'm saying? So if you have your 5 gallons is 5 gallons, a bucket, and you can only fit 5 gallons. So if I put 20%, or let's say I put 80% of this chlorine dioxide in there, or that would not be efficient, and we would notice that.
Well, I think that if there were a chemical, again, put in there, the city would be monitoring those chemicals coming out of the facility.
Do we look for anything, or do we look for specific? I mean, because, it's like a blood test. And if you take a blood test, if you're not looking for a certain thing, you don't find it.
Well, we do a full suite of testing, all the water quality parameters that are a complete suite of testing is done and that you know could implement something like that on a more regular basis. Certainly, we're doing that.
And it shows everything in the water.
It shows everything that's being regulated under primary and secondary drinking water constituents. Everything. As far as everything in the water, it tests for the primary and secondary drinking water constituents. And I'm sure there's other tests that can be done to determine if there's something else in the water.
Now, byproduct. Are there other chemicals that are used that we get in America? Like parts of the chemicals come from outside the country to the distributor before we get it? So it doesn't come directly to us from Europe, but it goes to the chemical plant from Europe. And then when it's produced or... So nothing. This is really one of a kind chemical.
It's a proprietary product. They're the only ones that make it currently. The Twin Oxide USA folks, their intention is to eventually set up a manufacturing facility here in this country.
Define eventually.
It depends on the how the material takes off. It looks very promising. It's a product that. Conventional chlorine dioxide is 70% pure. It's a very unstable chemical. It has to be generated on site. You take an acid and a salt, basically, with an electrical current, and make the stuff. But conventional chlorine dioxide has some bad harmful byproducts associated with it, chloride and chlorate specifically. And this product is 99.9% pure. It doesn't have those byproducts, chloride. That's one of the reasons why we found it so lucrative.
Do we have employees that have been trained on how to use this and use it safely?
Oh, yeah. In order to mix it, you take part A and part B and add it to water. We basically make about 125 gallons of it at a time. They have to wear an organic vapor, cartridge, a respirator, hypertension, apron, rubber gloves, that kind of thing.
If we use this material and we're happy with it, and we set up a purchasing agreement with this company, if they change since this is a proprietary formula that they have, if they should modify it or change it, will we be aware of that so that we can retest? Because at the end of the day, we're taking our ZSM plant number 2 and using it as a test lab, if you will, because they're trying to introduce this product into the United States, and God bless them for that. But we're at the cutting edge of where this material is being used. So if I'm in the Netherlands and I come rushing in with a lab report saying, I found a way to make this even better, we want to change this formula. It's proprietary. We don't know what's in it. So they have to tell us, hey, be aware that what we're selling you now is a little bit different than what you bought originally. Are we protected from that?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes, with the ANSI standard and National Sanitation Foundation's standard 60. If they made a change, it would have to go through that whole process, and that's a very rigorous, expensive process.
Is this an ISO plant in the Netherlands?
I'd have to find that out.
Okay.
On that same question, in regards to proprietary product that we would be tied to, what about cost? Would we be protected from cost? I mean, if we run this test and then say, okay, this is what we're going to do, because right now they're giving us a discount for the test.
It's $2.98 per liter, 11.26 per gallon. They have told us verbally that they're not going to raise the price on the product.
From what we see now.
Yes.
And then we'll get that in contract when we go forward.
Jim, is there a cost benefit to using this product over the current process we're using? And then not just from a cost of purchasing this product compared to what we're using, but also then the benefit that we're going to get in the water itself that we're following?
Yes, we're still working the details on that, Mr. DeLorenzo. One of Phil's jobs will be to put together, I might mention, we're looking at other options besides just chlorine dioxide. We're looking at a couple forms of THM removal processes that actually remove these byproducts after they're formed, rather than not being formed with the chlorine dioxide. So, you know, we're kind of doing these in parallel with the testing of the chlorine dioxide. We kind of wanted to do one thing at a time, so we're not changing a lot of different parameters. So Phil will look at the cost-benefit analysis of all of these alternatives and come up with what's best. But the chlorine dioxide is a very effective disinfectant, much more so than chlorine, which is the chemical that is commonly used, and we use at the plant as well. We actually combine a chlorine-treated stream. The 80% portion of the plant produces the permeate from the nanofiltration part, and then the filtrate stream, basically 20%, combined into one that goes into the storage tank and mix. The chlorine dioxide actually enhances the effectiveness of the chlorine. And the upstream of that has the added benefit of, as such a strong disinfectant, it kills any bacteria, viruses. We've actually been having a problem in the treatment process with calcium carbonate scale coming off of the softener and then going through the UF feed tank and into the ultrafilter feed system. This kind of cleans all of that up. You know, we have every 2 weeks the guys have to shut the plant down and do a complete cleaning to remove the sludge and so forth. And after 2 weeks of feeding in our new location, it's cleaned that up and basically cut down on that amount of labor in half, and we anticipate further improvements there.
Okay. So as you go through this pilot program and try the different ones, then you'll analysis to be done and what is the best.
That's right.
Not just from a chemical purchasing point of view, but a complete operations point of view.
Yes. And we're also looking at savings in polymer. We're getting ready to do some jar testing at the plant, which is basically takes samples of water from the process and you take it in the lab and set it up on a small scale and do an analysis of different polymers, and we're going to try a negative molecular charge polymer versus our positive charge polymer that we're using now. It's supposed to further enhance the chlorine dioxide and require less polymer use overall and savings there. So,
and this will have to come back to us before we move forward.
Back. Well, this will be on your agenda.
No, I mean after the test, not this. So we'll say, yes, go ahead and buy this for this test.
Okay.
And then when we make that decision, it'll have to come back to us.
This is
the way we're going to go. It's going to be a new contract.
This will be enough to get us through the pilot process. We'll come back if in fact it proves to be viable. And, you know, we still don't know exactly how much chemical that we would be using in this process. So once we determine all that, we'll come back with a regular contract. We bid all our chemicals, I won't say annually, but annually the co-op goes out. Brian in our purchasing department has is doing it for a regional area, all the local utilities, for economy of scale purchasing. And some of our chemicals are, they're all one-year contracts with 2 1-year renewals. And if the company opts to maintain their price, then we renew typically for that second and third year.
This one will be different because we'll be the only one.
This one will be a little bit different. It won't be involved in the bid process, but it will be, you know, part of our overall chemical.
It will still have to, you know, same it will process. Always be over 30,000 for all the chemicals. Come to city companies. I'd like to close out by saying, we have a state and national recognized team in our water treatment plants. I mean, these are award-winning guys that do, you know, top ops, national winners almost every year.
And we've got a great relationship with him and Crane. We couldn't have our water system in better hands, in my opinion, than what we have here in Palm Coast. It is top shelf utility. And it's one of the reasons why they don't get the news, because it's, when you have problems is when you get the news. You won't see that either. So I congratulate them and have a great deal of confidence. And have to, though, because what they do is critical.
I agree with you, Mr. Lannon, and I want to see that reputation protected.
Absolutely.
The first time somebody puts anthrax in our drinking water, everybody's going to forget how wonderful our water treatment people are.
I don't think it will matter.
Are there any additional questions?
Appreciate your concerns, Mr. McGuire. We'll look into.
And I appreciate yours.
Additional questions? Agenda item number two, resolution approving an addendum to the work order with Kim and Greed for the completion of the city's beachside sewer service phase one project. Mr. Lannon, tell
this
us.
Project is totally finished. Thank goodness. It's extended beyond its time frame that was allowed by the contract. We actually collected $104,000 in liquidated damages because of that. That delay obviously causes engineers to have to spend more time or inspections. And so Kimberly, who was our engineer on the project, we had change orders of almost up to $60,000. So, but it's really a pass-through. That's why you collect $104,000 from the contractor, because we know we have added expenses. In this case, the contractor who are paying for the engineer cost was a pass-through, and so it requires your approval for that pass-through.
So the whole amount is just for time? I'm seeing that it was kind of reworked. Somewhere through it, we changed routes and...
There were some things that we had to change as a result of the approval process of the county and the CDD.
We actually moved, during the design process, the first change order, we actually moved the site of the pump station. It was going to be on Hammock Dunes property, and then they didn't want us there, so we moved it to the county's park site. So there were additional costs because they had already been basically
so
designed.
So that wasn't the timing. That was just
that
the
was
change
the design on. Process. So the contractor didn't have any influence on that. And the second change order really was additional work for the design of, on the park site, some additional DOT permitting work that was done prior to the contractor's contract. So really the contractor's damages, if you will, to us, to our engineer, are the basic $30,000. So the 100, if you look at it as we collected 104 in liquidated damages, take away the 30, the city kept roughly $75,000 for our damages. Extra time for staff, extra downtime that we didn't receive funds coming in for the improvements. But because we couldn't collect revenue since the job wasn't done, and those kind of things. So,
the total change order from the Kimberly is just under 60,000.
Mr. Lannon, why does we're looking to pay 30,000, give or take, out of the 104 we saved? Why does this require council action?
Because they had the other 28 or 29,000. So it's a total of about 60,000.
But you're taking it out of 104.
Yes.
Again, why does this require?
Because anytime we write somebody a check for over 30,000, it requires your approval.
Purchasing process.
All right.
No matter where we get the money from. In this case, it's a process. It's a pass through.
Okay.
But it still takes your
spoiler plate.
Yeah. I mean, it's all done. I mean, and it absolutely not fair to Kim and Creed not to pay them for their extra time when they collected from them. Yeah, I mean, it really is pretty much just a...
While we're on this, Mr. Lannon, who's responsible for the maintenance of that pump station, us or Beverly Beach?
We are. It's ours.
Do we bill them for maintenance?
Well, we charge them the utility rates that go towards maintenance of the whole system.
Sure. Okay.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much. Agenda item number 3, discussion of city council salaries. Mr. Landon?
This is the item that you've discussed a couple times before. You asked us to bring it back when we had a fairly short agenda. Well, if this isn't a short agenda, I don't know what it is. So. Chris provided you with the kind of the interactive spreadsheets that showed the, depending on you have a variety of options you're looking at, the actual overall cost. He's prepared to help you through that, but we don't have any presentations. This is really city council's discussion.
Councilor, we've in previous sessions talked about adding to the compensation for city council, such things as health benefits. We've talked about proportionate salary changes, making it proportionate to some other number. We've talked about cost of living increments. So here are the numbers. What would you like to do?
Okay, so I guess I'll be the one that starts this, gets in the most trouble. So we're not going to figure out.
I realize nothing you say is going
to be. Yeah, even if it's a dollar, I'm going to get back at it. But I tried to look at every possible way of coming up with a figure because Palm Coast is original. It's not like other cities. It was kind of hard to come up with. There's other towns that have 80,000 people in it. And I went through Sunrise City or Daytona or Deerfield Beach. And this cities that make a considerable amount more than us with the same amount of people. Again, they're not like Palm Coast. So then I tried to figure out if we did a percentage of what the commissioners make. And in a way, I can kind of understand that because out of 11 counties, we have the only city that actually has more than the whole, any other city. You know, if you take all the other cities in this Flagler County, it doesn't add up to what we have in just Palm Coast. And it came up to 40-something thousand. So I said, okay, I can't say 40,000 because I can't offer that to people who live here. I can't say to them, you can go out and find a $40,000 job. It's going to be easy. So I went online and found that the average person working in Palm Coast would make roughly $22,000. I think it was $22,856. And I think that's a fair number. That's what the average person would make, and I think that would be the average for us to start with. But we have to start with something. And I also noticed when I was online looking at other cities that there's other cities that have the same dilemma, that they felt awkward asking for their own raises. So I think that it is something that other cities have had to deal with, that they had make their own raises, and it's kind of an uncomfortable thing to do that. So I think if we changed it so that it takes it out of our hands and we just get it, whatever increase the city gets, we just get that same increase, that would be a better way of doing it. And that's my whole thing.
Well, I'm kind of where you are. But I was basing the city council salaries based on the lowest paid full-time city employee, which is close to that. It's about 20 somewhere. So it's really close to that. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm sitting. You know, I just think we have, you have the time put in, and we can attract, I'm hoping, people, and we, you know, it's not just even a full-time salary, but to compensate somebody who does work and say, okay, well, you know, you're going to put 30, 40 hours in here anyway, or not anyway, but you're going to put 30, 40 hours in here, period. You know? So part-time, they lied to me. And so, you know, but I knew that coming in, and I think most people know that coming in. But it makes it easier to use this as a stipend for someone else's salary, you know, so they could apply the time that's needed. I hate to, for people to not try to get into the race because they can't put the time in. And I definitely don't want them getting in if they can't put the time in. And you just win an election and then, you know, show up on Tuesdays. I just feel like we need to get up there and show that that we're serious about who's on the panel, on who's on the council, and who comes to the council. And I like that. Like I said, I like that number. The percentage of the county people. You know, we don't need to tie ourselves to that. I'd rather tie ourselves to one of our employees. And then, like you said, whatever that increase is on a yearly basis, if that goes across the board, it just flows with that.
I think that being on the city council, speaking for myself, is a labor of love to a certain extent. You want to do something to give to the community that you live in and help to maintain it and make it better. I don't have a problem with the salary I get now. What I would like to see is take the consumer price index each year and apply that to my base rate. And as far as compensating for expenses, if my expenses in the consummation of my duties to the city exceed a certain level, then I should be able to turn in an expense report, let it come before the council and get voted to compensate me for the expenses that I incurred that are not part of the normal remuneration for mileage and telephone. That's my suggestion. But I don't feel real strongly about this. I got to tell you, I signed up for this at $9,600 a year, and I'm here for the long haul. So whatever it shakes out is what. And like I said in previous meetings, I don't expect to make money doing this, but I don't expect to lose money doing this. I have spoken.
Well, I think, Mayor, I think you suggested this at one point in time, and that's what I favor the most, is starting with going back retroactively to the last time it was adjusted, adding CPI from that point and catching us up to where we are now, and then having that annual adjustment from there forward. I think that, if you want to call them the founding fathers or the pioneers of Palm Coast, they have an idea in mind. It's been adjusted a couple times to make sense. And I, like you, Bill, it's definitely is for the love. It's for the care for your community. It's not for the money, that's for sure. And, I think, I don't believe that I'm over, I'm tracking very closely, but I don't believe I'm spending more than I'm making. It's probably pretty darn close.
X time.
Well, the thing.
Well, I don't consider the time, right? Not including the time. It's actual expenses.
Yeah,
it's actual expenses.
Right there, but my main concern with that is when you put, I don't think, Jason, I agree with what you said, except that I think if you put a lot of miles on your vehicle, I don't think we're compensated adequately for the wear and tear on our vehicles. I just don't.
How does that work? What do we get? Is it not based on the federal? Yeah, so whatever the federal cents per mile is.
Right, the current mileage allowance was just established based on a number of miles that
right.
were driven each year.
Factored
by the IRS rate.
Yeah, okay. Right. Gotcha.
And what is that mileage that's anticipated?
55 and a half,
I think.
Right, so the total annual mileage right now, the initial amount auto allowance is $1,200, so it's about 2,300, 2,400 miles is what is automatically factored into for city council reimbursement. So I think what Mr. McGuire is saying is if it winds up being 25,000 miles, that he would prefer that there be some ability to get reimbursed above and beyond the initial.
Or supply me with a city vehicle for city business. As I put, my vehicle has 145,000 miles on it. I would say half of that I've put on in the 5 years I've been on the city council. And it's almost as bad as Mr. Reichman's vehicle, if such a thing is possible.
Are you going to stop going to Orlando and look for work?
I guess.
But the founding fought, well, this is what I heard. I think the mayor mentioned this. Their goal with the salary was, first of all, the number was arbitrary. And second,
well, I got in trouble for using that.
Oh, did you? Okay. It was something better than arbitrary. But more than anything, it was designed to get the incorporation passed. You know, it wasn't so much as well, let's look at what's going to happen, and then we're talking a big difference. I mean, like Mayor Campfield said, you know, we went from carrying all the files in a box to where we are today. That, you know, the big, big difference, and the number of constituents has dramatically changed. So times, you know, the times have changed since then, and any other. I mean, even if you go back to 2004 or 2005. You know, there's been, even with a great depression, recession, we still are a very large and had some really big growth over the last 10 years. And I just feel like it needs to show it like it did with City Hall, you know, putting up the City Hall and saying, here we are. We need to have the compensation for potential council members. And I'm with Bill. I signed on for what it was with no intention of getting any more. But this was brought to me. My first thought when I first came to me, it was from constituents, not something I
had. And Steve, before we were elected,
yeah,
we had a certain vision of what was going to be required to do this job.
Oh, yeah.
Mine was real wrong.
Oh, was it?
Oh, I didn't think I'd have to put in the many hours as I do.
Well,
to do it right.
Being a being attached to watchdogs, so to speak, the hours I was putting in before, I was anticipating the same, but it is more. I did not think 35, 40 hours, you know, when I first...
I mean, you probably get an email every day of somebody that has got to see you. They don't want to talk on the phone. They need you to come to see you so I can show you this terrible thing here.
And then I send them an email and say, look, I'm part-time. I won't be able to get there.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
Now, just for the record, I never said that. Either. Don't know.
I was just asking the mayor if he had an idea what his mileage log was for last year. Because maybe this should 4, be...
4,000 miles, Chris?
Maybe this is two-part. Maybe it's a bumping of the salary, but really a bumping of the allowance. If
you go to a TPO meeting once a month.
Yeah.
You take your own vehicle.
I do. I'll go tomorrow.
When I got sucked into going to them, I had a city employee drove me in a city vehicle. You don't go down there with one?
No, I go by myself.
Okay.
See, and
they trust me more. They don't come with me.
But that's an example. I mean, you're going to go down there once a month,
yes,
and be there for most of the day for a TPO meeting because you're our representative. Now, when I went to them before you became the representative, Jose Papa took me down there and brought me back.
I did do that early on a couple times.
In a city vehicle.
Yeah, but now I
don't. So you need to get a motorcycle like me, because it's really...
I had a motorcycle.
It costs 15 cents to ride around.
I'm curious what you think about this.
Since I will benefit from whatever this discussion is, I'm really not going to chime in. The one thought that I had, you knew what the salary was when you signed up. You may not have known what the job was, but you knew what the salary was. I don't think anybody got on the city council to find themselves a full-time job.
I have suggested in the past that perhaps cost of living adjustment might make sense. For myself, and Jason asked the question, my mileage log last year was on the order of 4,000 miles. Now, that means I'm going to Jacksonville three times a month, four times a month. Is it directly city business? Well, if you consider the regional council city business, if you consider the regional community institute city business, it's associated with it. And that's 120 miles round trip times three or times four. My mileage far exceeds what the compensation is. So I am out of pocket in that sense. It seems to me that compensation based on actual mileage might make sense. But you can argue what constitutes appropriate mileage. Is driving from my home here to City Hall mileage? If you were an employee of the city, the IRS says no. The cost of driving to and from work is not an acceptable factor. But we're not employees of the city. In theory, we have to come to City Hall four times a month, I guess. In practicality, I see many of you here, if not every day, every other day, which means that I'm here every day, every other day. So it's compensation on actual mileage makes sense to me. It's too late for me to do anything about it. I've been out of pocket for all the years I've been on city council. The one, and I think a couple of you have alluded to this, the one advantage the county commission has is that their salary is not arbitrary. It is set, it is fixed by the state, and it's based on population. They never have to vote on their salary. So they simply sit back and take the proceeds, and we know that Palm Coast and Flagler County is going to continue to grow. We know their salaries are going to continue to grow. It's never been a bone of contention among the public because it's never been discussed in public. Whatever we do is we're going to have to vote on it, and the public is going to express their opinions one way or the other on how we vote.
I would hate to see this position as one that offers enough remuneration where I need a job and I can't afford to find one, so I'll just run for election, and if I'm elected, then the money will pay me what I need to pay. I know, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I know that there are people within 50 miles of here that ran for office for one reason only. They needed the money. And their performance, in my opinion, reflects that more so than a desire to serve and help the community.
Yeah, I agree. If we went higher,
and too higher.
If we went 40, people would say, okay, there's a job opportunity there, and I can put 5,000 out to run so that I can make 40,000 a year.
There's an experience of that here, actually, in Flagler, because there was someone who stood on the street corner who didn't have a job and waved a sign all day, every day, for weeks and weeks.
More
and
than one, Jason.
And got that job.
Yeah. And we'll do anything to hold on to that job.
Okay, let's move on here. But and I agree with that. That's why I like the idea of the number, like what Heidi came up with. That's really, I don't want to speak out of tune, but that's not something I would be grappling for as a, especially temporary.
If no one's going to make a living on that amount of money, I think when they last decided how much everyone was going to be paid or compensated, what everyone say, I think they, after that, any time it came up, we were in a downhill. We were in a time where you wouldn't want to ask for a raise. The city probably might not even have got a raise. It wasn't a time. And then elections come up, and then no one wants to be the one to ask for the raise. And I feel like the next group that are coming in here, I think that we owe it to them to speak up and say, we need a little bit more, we deserve a little bit more, we should be getting what other cities our size are getting. And I think anyone that actually has been running is at a point where they're bringing something to the table, and we deserve, you know, not that we deserve it from the city, but we earned at least 20-something thousand a year. I think we bring that much to the table for the citizens. I think anyone that I've tried to help that's called me, I think they would, you know, I don't know what comes out to per person that somebody would have to add more to their taxes, but I think I hope that they feel that I earned that when I show up at their door and I go to action for them. You know?
I agree with you, but just keep in mind that a lot of us that came from other places in Florida, where I came from, the city aldermen don't get any money. The school board doesn't get any money. You run for office, but you serve without compensation.
I looked at that when I looked at which ones are the same size, and I've had people tell me, well, I worked somewhere and they didn't get compensated. Then I looked at the amount of people that lived there. Yeah. There wasn't 30,000 people that lived there, or there were 17,000 people that lived there. Right. And it's understandable that it's a small community. Everybody knows everybody. You don't, you know, it's an easy phone call when you say there's a problem. But we have a lot of services. So for our county, we provide a lot of the services right here from the city. And I think, I don't know, I that's just how I feel.
A strong case. All I'm telling you is that brace yourself, because people go, hey, by God, when I lived in East Podunk, Illinois, doggone it, they didn't get any money.
I know, I've heard it.
And that's we'll just bring up in New Jersey, never got a dime.
Well, we'll just bring up that city in California where the chief made $500,000 a year. That's that chief.
He's also, I agree with you. It's not fair to compare city to city. But I am interested, what was the number for Deltona? Because Deltona is, in a lot of ways, in many ways, it's similar. It was built similar, it was, you know, developed by
one of the pre-platted communities.
The mayor got 12,000.
I'm sorry, what is?
The mayor there gets 12,000.
That's 600 more than I'm getting.
Hey!
Oh, fix that.
And I don't have time with the...
It's probably
similar to us.
Breakdown.
And I would want to...
The other side of the coin, my friends, is there are people that put 30 and 40 hours a week in at Habitat for Humanity and get nothing. Mm-hmm. There are people that put 20 and 30 hours in a week at the Humane Society and get nothing. There are people throughout this county who contribute significant time and fund their efforts in a charitable fashion and get nothing in return other than a sense of satisfaction.
And they knew when they signed up for it that they weren't going to get
counseled. But here's the difference. Is in the city, I don't want to cause someone who would benefit the city greatly to not run because, well, I just can't make it. You know, I do my volunteer work too, and I know this, you know, and sometimes when I can't do it, if I'm too busy, you know, I'll give money. But that's different than serving the city, not in the job focus itself. What I do, I would do this for nothing. I would, you know, because that's why I ran. I knew it. I didn't need it. But I'm flexible enough in my position that I can say, yeah, I can don't, you know, I can give this time. You know what I mean? And do a good job, I hope, at it. But we have a lot of good people out there. As our population, the median age starts lowering, that we have a good group of people out there who may then stop and say, well, you know what? I can get involved. If I can stipend, you know, if I can use this as a stipend with my other work, I can give up some of this work and serve with proper time. That's what I don't, from my perspective, is not so much as to do we deserve that money or not, but it's more to help, you know, grow the potential pool.
I'd like to sign up for that, Steve. The only thing is that when you look at the percentage of registered voters that participate in elections, that don't tell me that there's people that are just dying to come to work for the government. They don't even vote.
No, but if you go to the, like, for instance, the Young Republicans Club,
right?
kids there.
There are.
And they're doing some good work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll get Patrick Giuliano, and, I mean, you know, he's moved through. These are the kind of people I would like to see.
I would, too.
You know, get involved. But they kind of, you know, they're like, well, I really can't. They're willing to sacrifice, so they can probably go. And what I'm saying is, these are the type of people who say, "Well, I can go make $60,000-$70,000 in private industry, but I'll give that up if I have enough to, you know, survive and then do a little something else." You know, that's what I'm looking. You know what I'm saying? Looking for the ones ready to sacrifice, but isn't in a position in life right now to just say, "I can totally give." You know. To what I have, to this.
Well, I think in all these cities that I lived up, I'm sure they all had the same discussion, and they all felt horrible having to bring it up.
Yeah.
I also don't want to say, well, I'll pass it on to whoever gets in 2016, and then they'll be in the same boat as we are and say, well, I'll pass it on to the next group that comes in, and then you're at the same spot forever because you never move it. I also think that right now, the way we have it, three people agree on an amount, and that amount, if it was 50,000 and we had three people here that all were in agreement with each other, it makes it very easy for a big raise to go through here. I think we need to change it so that whatever we decide, it goes by whether it's the city or the state, or kind of take it out of our hands so that it's some other way that the raises go on from now on.
Yeah, and
that's why I think you bring it up to an amount that's reasonable, and from there, just make it 3% or whatever the city is.
And that's why I like tying it to the lowest set paid employee, mm-hmm. and if they can survive in here, then, you know, then we can, or not we, but whoever is in that opportunity, and then whatever that base salary moves to, that's what the salary moves to. And again, it's out of our hands. It is tied to something, and it's tied to something that's important to the city, and that's our employees. You know.
To Heidi's point, we have an election coming up in 2016. We have a number of candidates who've already filed. I'd be curious, as part of their campaign platform, to hear what their expectations are in terms of salary.
Oh, they
won't say that.
Oh, well, then.
Well, I mean,
that's political.
If you ran on, I want to get in and raise how much I make.
So you get in now by saying you don't want anything, and then you ask for something. How is that more ethical? How is that more acceptable?
It's not ethical, but I think what they'll do is they'll just not. And I would, too. If I were running this year and somebody came to me and said, the council's thinking of raising the salaries, what do you think? I'd say, you know what, I'd leave it up to them because they're the ones with the experience. And I'll abide by whatever they decide. And then I'd walk away and go, phew. But, because I wouldn't answer that. Because you're going to, like you said, you're dead either way.
Well, the smart answer, if you're a candidate, is I am running for this office and I accept the conditions that this office has today.
There you go.
You know, whether, you know, if I didn't accept the remuneration now, I'm not running because maybe I'll make more money.
Right.
Here again, you get into people that are looking to make a chunk of money. They're not looking to serve the city of Palm Coast.
Right. And I don't think that and again, I could be wrong. I was wrong once. I thought I was right, but I was wrong. But,
no, you thought you were wrong, but you
were
right.
But I don't think that level, I don't believe that level of salary will push that too much. I'm not going to say at all.
I mean, Chris, do we know how much it comes out to our household? If we use
that'd
be about
45%. Sure. I may, while Chris is looking, yes. Just to talk about process a little bit. Not substance, process. This is something we talked about the last time. In your charter, it says council members and mayor shall receive compensation. It's established by ordinance. So that's the process. Timing. Talks about that as well. I'm just reminding everyone, I know we talked about it. But compensation, if it's changed, shall not take effect until the date of commencement of the terms of councilmembers elected at the next regularly scheduled election that follows the
Can you put that into English?
Means it doesn't.
Let's
not in effect. If you guys raised it by $1, it doesn't affect you. As long as the next elections would be 6 months after whatever this ordinance does.
6 months after November 16.
No.
It can't 6 months before.
You have 6 months before.
You have to approve it.
Suppose today we approved a $1 increase. When would that kick in and for who?
The next group.
For all seated council members. Right. Whether, all right.
Yes.
Not till November, whatever, 18th or 20th.
After the next election. Correct. And the other thing that is, I didn't mean to cut you off, Chris, but the other thing is, and this is a direct, real subtle impact, but I just want to make sure you all know it. Our charter provides that for qualification fees. You know, if you want to qualify, and some of you don't know this, there's a couple ways you can qualify in the city of Palm Coast, and one is by paying some dollars, which is 10% of these numbers, is $11,400 and $9,600. Or you can get 1% of the last electorate to sign a petition. And Florida courts have said that these types of fees, these qualification fees, are legal if, quote, the fee is reasonable or there are alternative means to qualify on a petition. So clearly we've got the latter. What is reasonable? The courts have said that the factor for that is the size of the ballot. Cities have a right to have an interest in regulating the size of the ballot. We're talking, you mentioned that. You implied that. Avoiding voter confusion is related to size of the ballot. Limiting the ballot to serious candidates, that was discussed. And defraying costs, those are all factors. So the point is that if you were if a city was to raise a city, not a county. Mayor, you indicated the difference between cities and counties, but if the city was to raise its salary such that the impact on the qualifying fees could not be supported or justified by those factors, then that could be challenged. I haven't heard
anything. The salary could be challenged or the qualifying fees?
Qualifying fees could be challenged. But because there's this direct relationship in our charter between qualifying fees and salary, then it would have indirect impact or a follow-up impact on the salary.
I'm not sure that the reverse would hold true. If we raise the salary to $50,000, I'm not suggesting that, then the qualifying fee would be, what,
$5,000.
And we argue that the qualifying fee is excessive. And you cut the fee down to $2,500. That doesn't mean the salary gets cut down to $2,500.
Well, we'd have to change the
charter
to 10%.
That's why I said they're tied hand in glove.
And I think when we make this decision,
I haven't heard anything today, by the way, that would give me a whole lot of pause.
But I think we've had citizen concern over that number, they were looking for it to go down. Right now,
right.
Whereas we're going to start pushing it up. So I would get it out there. I would throw out that we amend that also, and to bring it to a static number versus a something tied to anything. But that, like you said, that's neither here nor there right now. It's. And this won't be in effect until the 2018 election.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Keep in mind, however, that any candidate can simply collect petition cards.
And there's not, population.
There's very little cost associated with that.
Most of the districts are like,
we have our charter recognizes an opportunity that of becoming qualified to run for election for a city council or for mayor.
And currently, you need. How many petitions? 500, 400?
No, it's 1%.
No, it's 1%. So in most districts, it's like 150. Well, mayor would be...
If you cannot collect 150 signatures, you probably are not a viable candidate.
The only condition in there is a late
because
they have to be collected from your district you represent. Now, yes. I knocked on 500 doors when I ran for election. I got maybe 20 petitions, and the rest I got standing at the library and all that. I just barely made it to get 138 of them because nobody in my district votes. They weren't interested. They didn't want to sign anything. So, I mean, there's point to me. I mean, I walked those hot streets of the B section day after day after day with a gentleman that was helping me, and we told him who I was. Oh, we don't go slam if they spoke English.
I found it very interesting because we did blocks, you know, every weekend. Yep. We hit blocks. We had a pretty good, I had about 70% signature rate, you know. And everybody wanted to have a big discussion. So, you know, we hit three houses a week.
Commissioner, can you come up with the equivalent millage rate?
Yes. The $100,000 of taxable value would be $1.83. Based on our average taxable value here in Palm Coast, it would be about $1.65 a year.
And right now, the millage rate is what, 4 or
something? Right.
So you're kicking the millage rate by 20 to 25%?
No,
that's $1.
No. $1.
The millage rate is
0.018.
And that's the number in green, Chris. Does that come out of the general fund?
That would come out of the general fund.
And when they last raised the salaries of city council, what did it go to and from? I mean, what was the point of raising it back then? I mean, everyone back then also entered into that council position.
We had exactly the same kinds of conversations. There's been no new issues raised. It was...
It wasn't a huge jump. It was a few $1,000s a year jump at that time. I can't remember the exact number, though.
But everybody, my point is everybody at that, and I'm not trying to argue, but everybody at that point knew when they took that position, that's how much they were getting.
That's correct.
And they probably felt as though there's more people here, we're building faster, we have more jobs here,
more homes to go visit, more. Yes, absolutely. That was... Everything we've heard here today, we heard at that time. And there were all legitimate comments. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of whether or not it's going to influence your thinking.
Okay. So we really didn't get anywhere.
Options before us are a raise in the base salary, a linking of the base salary to some variable, whether it be population or CPI or something like that, or the adjustment of the accessory compensation, a mileage allowance or communication allowance, something like that, or the addition of some other benefit like health insurance or something. So I mean, those are all options that are available to make a change in the compensation for city council.
And Mr. Mayor, as to the last point you made, the charter says the council may provide for reimbursement of actual expenses incurred by its members while performing their official duties.
Period. They may, but not that they must. I will ask you to my mileage allowance every year has been about twice the compensatable value.
The reason I was reading that was actually not may versus shall, but actual expenses. Actual expenses, and those expenses that are incurred while performing their official duties. Nothing inconsistent with what you said. I just want to make sure that there's a...
But then, of course, you can get to the question of what constitutes performance of duties. If Bill McGuire gets a call from somebody in the far ends of his district and says, you've got to come see this horrible mess, and he gets in his car and drives to see that horrible mess, is that performance of duty?
Yes.
Or is that campaign, or is that politicking, or is that...
It better be performance of duty, because I turned it in on my mileage.
Okay, well, that's my question.
The other part of that is if you turn in compensation and request compensation above what the budgeted allotment is, you get taxed on it. Because then it becomes income. It's no longer an expense
reimbursement. No. Unless I'm wrong, Chris, I turn in my mileage allowance every December.
Right.
And I'm guessing it runs about 4,000 miles, give or take, on that order of magnitude.
Yeah.
The compensatable value is 2,000 miles. That does not mean that I'm taxed on the difference, because I'm not given the difference. I'm only given the 2,000 miles worth of compensation.
Right.
If you turn in, if your compensation is for 2,000 miles and you turn in 1,000 miles, then you are taxed on the difference.
Right. So whatever of the allowance you don't consume in actual miles, then that becomes taxable.
Yes. However, that being said, based on my experience, I've read that I do some things that the council typically doesn't, with the regional council and so on and so on. I can't imagine you doing your job and not generating 2,000 miles.
Right.
I just can't imagine
that being the case. My problem is I don't track it. Because I'm already in my, you know, and I'll plan, I'll go out, go there, and then, then I'll run over.
Steve, you know how far it is from your house to City Hall.
Right.
And you know,
so a few miles.
I mean, it's very easy to get to City Hall is a round trip of X amount of miles.
Right. That's true, too, yeah.
That's so relatively easy.
Yeah, I turned in no miles this year, so I did nothing.
And let me point out to council, unfortunately, by about 10:30, I'm going to have to leave for my daily treatment, so...
He's
going to
turn in mileage for that?
No, I don't.
Well, you can always say that this the job caused the aggravation.
You would say that there's 1, 2, 3 options that we put up there, and I don't know how we go from everyone having a different idea to
what we have to decide on.
The way you do it is somebody at a council meeting says, I move that we adjust the salaries by X. And then if you get a second, then you have a discussion, you have a vote. And if that fails, then somebody else says, I move that we increase the to Y, and we take a vote. I mean, we can't make that decision here today.
No.
We can talk about it, we can explore options, but any action we take would have to be at a business meeting. It's an ordinance.
It's an ordinance.
So that would mean there have to be a motion, a second, a vote, and there would have to be a second reading of that ordinance.
Yeah. Adopted pursuant to 166, like any other ordinance?
Yeah.
What we could do is draft the ordinance and leave things blank, and then you could just fill in the blanks. We need a little guidance as to, and we can do both, and you can delete and adjust it, but I'm hearing adjusting the salary for a certain amount starting November of 16, and then an annual cost of living kind of adjustment go along with that, so that have that provision there too. Those would be the two that you could vote on. Decide. You'd have to tell what index you want to use, the same thing. We adjust our salary schedule at the city, same thing the state uses, the CPI, you know, variety of things.
For consistency's sake, whatever adjustment factor the city uses, that's the factor we would use.
And that's why I like just tying it to our lowest base salary, and then as it changes, if it goes up, whatever it goes up, it goes up. If not, then not. But... like I said, we're tied. We're like city employee when it comes to pay rate, and we're just at the entry level rung.
Why don't you draft a model ordinance and with option ABC built in, and see if somebody cares to bring it forward to business meeting?
Sure, we can do that.
We can sit here all day and talk about the pros and cons. Somebody's going to have to step up.
I say we.
And personally, I can't wait to Mr. Reichman's presentation. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that for 2 weeks.
All right, can we move on? Discussion by City Council matters not on the agenda.
Good job, Chris.
Mr. McGuire, let's start with you, sir.
Nothing
Mr. Mobile. Vice Mayor. Mr. DiLorenzo, up your computer.
Yes, so here we go. Fern Mill Lane. Weird. Is anybody, is everyone getting info on Fernwell?
Fernwell? Actually, I drove by their template.
Okay, we have to do something, and not just, I know we had some discussion about retroactively we'll, you know, fix problems when we're all done, but I mean, the people, they're getting killed over there on, that's a bad term. They're having a lot of issues on Fernmill because of the closing of both, Park Grove on both ends, I guess would be the best way to put it. What can we do? I mean, we either have to have patrols there every day during the high traffic areas or what, but I mean, I got another email today and this has been going on for a few weeks and we had some discussions about it, but or yesterday I got the email.
What is the nature of the complaint?
Okay, so what happened is all of the traffic
is
going on to Fernmill to get to school, to get to the construction project,
yes,
and everything else.
And what are you proposing as a fix?
I don't know, but we have to do something. We have to do something.
We've attempted to do some things. So that doesn't totally solve.
Then send them down Florida Party Drive.
We do have patrols out there, and the residents we talked to acknowledge that the deputies are out there on a regular basis to try to control the speed or control the speed.
Can you interrupt for 1 second? Is the issue speeding or is it volume?
Both. Well, okay. We've asked the school district to change their bus route where they practically can. There's some that would have to go out of the way to the point where they couldn't get kids to school on time. And they have. About half of the buses go a different way. It's my understanding. So we've worked on that. I'm hearing the contractor still using it, and that really upsets me, but we need to, you know, make sure the contractor is not supposed to be using that as a route whatsoever with construction traffic, and I don't understand why it would. The other thing we've done is actually put up detour signs to have people use Fellowship.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't heard any complaints from Fellowship, but, you know, detours are just bad news when you use residential streets. Right. I mean, the choice. I mean, just.
But
they have.
Mr. Landon, did we have a community meeting before this construction?
Absolutely. Yep.
And was it explained that this would likely happen?
Explaining it and actually experiencing it two different things.
I understand, but my only point is this: if something is happening that's different from what we told those people, then we got to fix it.
Well, the thing is, I think the road. It's not so much that they're going down that road, but that road causes, by nature,
does
a lot of, you know, because you got those two big curves. Whereas Fellowship should be a more straight cut through.
If you want to give it a chance, a try, we could take steps to say local traffic only. You're going to have to have, I mean, there's going to have to be some bus traffic. There's going to have to be some traffic there. But try to block off. We can look at blocking off.
I consider school bus traffic to be local traffic.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we need to do that. These people have experienced enough. And hopefully we're going to be done in maybe 6 weeks or so. Hopefully around 6 weeks where the Palm Harbor extension will be complete. And then this will solve it. Okay.
Yes, this will go away.
But even if we have to rotate, you know, they experienced enough. Let someone else experience it, for lack of a better term.
I'm not prepared to, but blocking it off at Fellowship and say, you know, the street is blocked, only local traffic from this point forward. I think that's the last street before you get to Fernmill. And so really force people to use Fellowship to go over to Old King Road. That will help. It won't, you know, there'll still be people who go around the barricade.
Right.
You know, that's just what people do. So, and then on the other side, Forest Grove, once again, we'll have to look at how we can actually move the barricades and say local traffic. You all, I agree. They have very legitimate right to be upset. There isn't a whole lot you can do when you have construction. Once it's over, it's going to be better for everybody. But during construction, it is definitely changing the character of the neighborhood. We are going to go in and repair and redo sod and, you know, all the things in the swale and right away that the traffic is destroying in the yard. We'll go in and repair all that. sprinkler heads, whatever it takes, because you know that part that's in the right of way, which is really where their damage is coming. But if you all are in agreement, realizing that, you know, I don't know if you're going to hear from fellowship or not, but be happy to try to cut out more traffic out of that winding
road. I think the more we push at fellowship, it'll split. It won't all go down fellowship. That, like you said, there'll still be people.
There's other rounds of
room, you know, but hopefully the truck, because that's probably, to me, the real problem, getting them down fellowship, because it's a straight, you know, it's a straight run, and they won't be cutting on lawns. And let me ask this question, if I can. It's a little bit off topic, but why are there sprinklers in the swales?
Because they put them in there without permission.
Okay.
They're not supposed to be in there, but we always take the position that we're not going to
push it.
You know, we go in and sometimes when we do swell work, we have to repair them and things. We just do that.
Okay.
It's if they get the permit like they're supposed to and do it right, we don't allow it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those that's just not worth. They're out there all over the place.
Yeah, so. That's what I figured. All right, good. All right, so take a look at your
yes. I think it's.
I'd rate the.
If nothing else, you're sharing the wealth, or you're spreading the misery out over it.
It's,
and then we're doing the same thing for Florida
It's all the same contractor for Forest Grove. I'm sorry, Old Kings Road North and or no?
No, Old Kings Road Extension is a different contractor.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to forget the name.
Uh-huh.
The contractor that we're using for Palm Harbor Extension
and
is the same one as the Intercepts,
which is
interchange.
Hubbard. Okay. Is the extension of Old Kings, is that's a county project? County managed project?
County managed project.
Right, county managed, right. Because it seems like the communication wasn't great here either. Closing both ends at the same time or adjusting the traffic pattern at both ends at the same time also contributed to this problem. But we have two different governments, I guess, working in.
Well, it's more the pain. Personally, I would prefer the pain at once. Get it done, move on, you know.
The ultimate goal is to try to get all this done before the interchange and all the delays we have.
And, of course, Darren, we're trying to work with the school district as best as possible to not interrupt the, you know, not have road closures in the middle of the school year, of course. And
a lot of challenges. You know, it's Palm Coast Parkway got off, you know, that because it's so visible. You know, got all the attention. This one has a lot of challenges with it, too, with all the diversion and school, et cetera. And overall, you know, once again, construction is always bad. Detours are always a pain, particularly if you have to use residential streets.
Yeah.
But at the end of when it's all done, it's going to be a whole lot better. It's just this construction period is definitely disruptive.
The Palm Harbor extension. Is it on time? Are we still looking at end of February, really early in March?
We're in March at this point, as late as I got. We're pushing hard, but so is the county pushing on the interchange, and we are trying very hard to make sure they stay on task.
Mm-hmm.
There are that. I think they're still at that stage where there's a lot of underground work. It looks like they're doing nothing. Once they start getting that final grade, it'll go very quickly.
Who's the commissioner for that district? Does anybody know? Is that Meeker?
It's Meeker's district.
Anything else, Mr. DeLorenzo? Sir?
No, thank you.
Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
I have to save my voice.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
A reminder for the public is that he is going to have part one of two open records, sunshine law, and ethics training, 4-hour required by state law for elected officials. We have invited all the elected officials that we did last year from throughout the county. And we've also scheduled a light lunch ahead of time at noon.
So we're not going to 1.
So it won't happen until 1. Yeah, it, I mean, when you schedule for everybody else.
Yeah. Let's not do that next time.
No, well, the deed is in 20 minutes for the TDC.
then you wouldn't get credit from the state of Florida because it has to be 50 minutes times 2. You get 10-minute breaks.
I'm thinking we go online next year.
There's a lot of other options, but yeah. I was happy to do this.
Well, yes, and we love it. I look forward to it. I really am.
From my standpoint, it helps because I can give direct feedback to the people that I work with before. So that's the advantage for me.
Well, I like to record it, and when I'm having trouble going to sleep, I can just click it on.
I'll try to keep you awake this year a little harder.
The
subject matter is difficult.
You're just going to dig deeper and deeper.
I know.
Mr. Landon, anything else?
Yes, a couple of events I'd like to highlight. First of all, our annual men's future tennis tournament, wild card qualifiers, and all that stuff starts this week. Thursday runs through next week. We also have. What I've been told is a great fun event here at Central Park this weekend, the Color Vibe 5K Saturday. That I know a lot of people, a lot of talk, and I'm looking forward to that. And then lastly, next weekend, actually starts Thursday through Sunday, February 5th through the 7th, is our Birds of a Feather Festival. Have a lot of activities going on that weekend for the birding community and the visitors. Maybe that's all I have.
What's the status of Holland Park renovation?
I'm hearing nothing but positive things at this point.
They're back on schedule?
They are making more progress. The schedule is catching up more than getting behind anymore. I'm not going to tell you they're going to be totally up to date, but they are catching up. And they're actually going vertical with buildings and structures, and so they are beyond the difficult underground stuff. Good. So good things happening out there at this point.
Well, I'm sorry. If I missed it last week when I was away, did you have discussed Little League at all?
Yeah, Little League, we've worked out with the tournament representatives in the school district, and they're going to use high school fields, and they're going to work out a schedule that doesn't interrupt the schedule of Little League and still has the tournament come here. The tournament people have been extremely cooperative, and they like the idea of this venue. They're hoping to continue this, so they're trying to work with us to make as many people as happy as possible. So
that's a nice field over at the high school.
Yeah. And I don't know all the details with the age groups and everything. And then this is where it's great to have the partners with the school district and them helping out and realize the importance of this. They also have a district championships, one of the fields, one of the weekends. For high school baseball, so that's a good thing too to have high school team coming.
If I may interrupt, I'm going to excuse myself. I pass the gavel to the vice mayor.
I'm finished.
Okay. Any more questions?
No.
Okay. We don't do any public participation during city council workshops, but you can speak about anything that we talked about today. Tuesday, February 2nd at 6:30, right here. And I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.